Welcome to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. This is the place where we help committed couples who want to level up their marriage experience newfound clarity, hope, and confidence. We're Matthew and Kim, co-hosts and husband and wife.
In 26 years together, we've seen a lot and never thought it could be as good as it is right now. We're here to help you successfully navigate the messy, dirty, and wonderful world of marriage.
We believe all couples deserve and are capable of experiencing an extraordinary and fulfilling marriage. And each week, we're bringing you life lessons from real-life successful couples to help you grow and strengthen your relationship.
We'll get started right after this message.
If you want to learn how to experience the best, most fulfilling year of your marriage, we invite you to order Matthew's new book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. You can get it at Amazon.com or visit Matthew's website, www.matthewpkaufman.com. Again, that's Amazon.com or www.matthewpkaufman.com. And now, back to the show.
We live in a crockpot world, but we all want microwave results. Everyone is looking for that silver bullet, that single pill that when taken will quickly resolve our issues and put us in that place where we'd ideally like to be. If only it was that easy. To create something wonderful not only takes time, but consistent, dedicated, and sustained effort to key behaviors, tactics, and activities. Once the goal is achieved and the summit reached, we cannot afford to rest and stop, but instead, recognize and celebrate our progress, look ahead to the next summit we need to overcome, and start the journey once again. To achieve relationship nirvana, we can learn to create the system, the habitual habits and actions that will help us repeatedly achieve those desired results as we continue to hone and apply our key relationship skills. Let's take a look at our 14 pillars of successful relationships and use them as a lens to look through as we explore creating the system that will help us ultimately achieve our own relationship nirvana. We are so excited to be here today for a special edition on the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. Today's episode is entitled Relationship Nirvana, and we are excited to welcome our wonderful panel of licensed marriage therapists. We have on the line today more than 75 years of experience of working with couples and helping people develop stronger, more successful relationships in marriage. I want to welcome Chris Cambus of Couples Strong and National Marriage Seminars with us today. Natalie Southward from, Chris. Yeah, we're excited to have you.
Good morning. How you doing?
We are excellent, man. We have a nice mind, a brain trust with us today. So Kim and I can't wait to tap in. We also have Natalie Southward from Life Transformation Counseling with us. Welcome back, Natalie. Love to have you back on the podcast. And Dr. Jeff Jennings with Greatest Marriage Ever, who also has a private practice based in Virginia.
So. I want to welcome all of you as well. And I would love to just dive right into talking about our families of origin, because I really believe that in order to go forward, we really need to take a step back and to look at how relationships were modeled to us when we were younger, what love looked like, how it was expressed in our families. And so we know that when we come to a new relationship, we bring a lot of that with us. So I'm just curious, I'd like to hear from all of you, what should a couple do? How should they address some of their family of origin when they come into a new relationship? Maybe Natalie, you could start.
Okay. So what I do is I have my couples, when they come in, they do a genogram. And so it traces back their family of history, their family of origin. It shows the connectiveness, disconnected, if there was divorces, just their connectivity, right? And then we tie in and we discuss, you know, who met your need for affection affirmation, attention, and comfort, who entered your world, who was a part of that. Being able to share that with your partner is eye-opening for them to understand your background, your history. And then also, what were the roles and responsibilities of the female parent caregiver, and what were the roles and responsibilities of the male caregiver or parent? And then I love assessments. So there are some family of origin assessments online, and we have some at our practice that we use. It just dives deeper into some of the questionings in regards to family patterns and themes and messages that were taken away. So
I hear you saying that you're really dissecting each of those individuals and what they're bringing to their relationship.
Right.
And I would be curious, Jeff, do you have anything maybe to add to that?
I think that's great. You know, Natalie's approach, and I do a lot of similar things. I really also just kind of look at, you know, their attachment style and how they navigated getting their needs met, right? What were healthy ways they learned to get their needs met? What were maybe some, you know, not necessarily unhealthy, but unhelpful, you know, or, you know, ways or ineffective strategies for getting their needs met, because that's what's often being carried over into their adult relationships, these ineffective strategies for getting needs met for love and affection. And that creates a problem, because when it's not working, people just tend to amplify what they're doing. They just do more of the same, and it makes things worse.
Yeah. Having needs met and knowing what those needs are such a critical path in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Chris, how about you? I know you, always have something to add. What would you say?
Yeah. So I concur with both. I use an assessment from the Gottman Institute that, covers family of origin and whatnot, but more than that, it goes into meta emotion, how we feel about feelings. And that's very telling, right? If you think in terms of special operations guys, you might have a wife saying, you know, you need to get over there and talk to that neighbor about the dog. You know, the dog's running around out there without a leash. It's going to hurt the kids. And you know, a Navy SEAL would say, everyone alive? It's a good day, right? So they don't connect to emotion. They don't connect to their feelings. And that, you know, certainly becomes very telling, right? So when we take a look at, you know, their meta emotion, are they a meta emotion mismatch, right? Then we start, you know, walking it backwards, and we have all that information on the assessments that we get. At the same time, when we see these meta emotion mismatch, again, how we feel about our feelings, they are very, you know, when it's meta emotion mismatch, there's a high prevalence of divorce. So when you work with couples that they're mismatched from a meta emotion perspective, it's, you know, well, it's never enough to just downregulate negativity with couples. You have to upregulate positivity, right? But with a meta-emotion mismatch, you have to work on upregulating positivity even more, right? Because it's just so imbalanced. And there's always a long history, that comes from. And you have homes that emotion was just shut down, right? There was, it just wasn't allowed. You know, I'm 57 years old. The only emotion we had in my home was anger. Right. Other than that, I mean, forget about crying or being sad. It was it's just pure anger. So you really weren't allowed to feel other than if you were going to be mad and scream. Right. My wife's home was very different. A lot of emotion. She comes from a Hispanic home. Lots of emotion going on in her home. And so, again, meta emotion mismatch, which sets up a lot of pursuer distancer relationships, kind of, you know, what EFT focuses in on. Not that any, all of this stuff can be handled, but it's imperative to, you know, pin these things down. And for couples, it's imperative to know where their partner comes from. You know, you have to know where your partners come from in order to be empathic and to be there for them. So I concur with everyone on the Zoom today. I think the genograms are phenomenal. If you really want to see why people do what people do, have them do a genogram. Holy mackerel. I looked at a genogram of the Kennedy family. I almost fell out of my chair. It starts up here with Joe, and then it's just generation after generation after generation of alcoholism, drug addiction, you know, problems with rape and, you know, on and on and on. It's a disaster. So if you really want to understand why people are doing what they're doing, with Natalie, look at the genogram. It'll tell you in a second.
Yeah. So a lot of history. It's interesting because we just have to unpack. I think people unfortunately fail to either have the conversation before they get married, or even once they're married, they may not even have had that conversation to understand that history. And I think you all are familiar with the 14 pillars of the relationship qualities that we have. And we would like to focus on the three C's. And as we look at commitment, Jeff, I'd like to start with you and ask, you know, what should, if a couple is stepping back, what should commitment look like in a relationship? I mean, how do we know if it's healthy, if it's unhealthy? And, you know, as we look at that critical foundation, I think it's really the cornerstone of any relationship. How do we know what it should look like and if it's healthy?
I think one, commitment is going to look different for each couple. So each couple has to really be able to communicate about what they need in terms of commitment and what healthy commitment looks like to them. But I think fundamentally for every couple, healthy commitment really is a matter of looking out for the well-being and the best interest of the other person. You know, I am committed to the best interest and the well-being of my partner. You know, so it's not just about me getting my needs met, but it's about how I can support and help my partner grow as well.
And Jeff, let me ask you a question. I think that's a great definition. Is it more important that our needs are met first and then we meet the needs of our partner? I mean, what's the hierarchy? What's the healthy hierarchy in a relationship? Is it me first, then my partner, or a combination? And what's a healthy way to look at that about needs being met and where we start?
I think the healthiest way to look at that from my perspective is being flexible. Because in any marriage, it's going to need to adjust. You know, sometimes, yeah, we do need to prioritize our needs. And other times we need to prioritize the needs of our partner. So we need to be able to adapt and adjust to the ebb and flow of relationships, because our needs are going to fluctuate differently at different times. And if we're just committed to meeting our needs, obviously, that's not going to be very healthy or work very well. If we're just committed to meeting the needs of our partner, that's not a good long-term approach either, because you're going to get burnout and you're going to start to resent your partner after a while. Right. So you really need to be able to adapt and adjust to life as it's happening.
Sure, that makes sense. Natalie, what do you think? What would you add to what Jeff has already said about how commitment should look like in a healthy relationship?
I agree. I mean, commitment has to be determined by each couple, each partner. But I always challenge my clients, whether individually or collectively as couples, before you commit, can you rely on them? And I don't rely on someone I can't trust, and I don't trust someone I don't know. So you have to know someone before you trust them before you can rely on them, and then rely on them. Then you're able to commit, whether that be in an exclusive relationship, maybe moving towards engagement or marriage, whatever commitment looks like for that person and where they are. And then the physical to follow, because it is proven that when you have those steps in proper order, physical intimacy, sexual intimacy is through the roof, because you have this healthy flow of trust and being able to rely. There's a strong, secure attachment in that relationship versus an anxious attachment. And so I really challenge my couples to really look at that. And it takes time. I mean, it takes time to know someone. And by knowing someone, you're building that friendship, right? And then trust, rely, commit. So I would just add that.
That's a great flow. I love that. And I think a lot of people usually like to jump to the end, right? It's like, let's get intimate, you know, can we get to the end, right?
All right. We connect on that level. Well, yeah. You can connect with anybody on that level, but what about knowing and trusting and relying? Those are the game changers in relationships.
I love that. Chris, what would you add to the kind of what healthy commitment should look like in a strong relationship?
You know, so I concur again with Jeff and Natalie. I think for me, when I see couples, what I see is a lack of commitment. And I would define commitment as I'm completely emotionally invested in this relationship. This is my journey for life, come what may. Couples get married, and I say this all the time because it's kind of the next thing to do. And they have kids because it's kind of the next thing to do. And they start their careers and they buy their homes and they do all these things without ever understanding the magnitude of the commitments that they've made. And then they get pummeled by Hurricane Katrina, 24/7, 365, and they snap. Commitment in a significant relationship like marriage, it's 95 billion light years. It's the size of the universe. And until couples stand on the edge of planet Earth and look into that 95 billion light years and look at one another and go, yeah, you know, I choose you, that relationship is going nowhere. And it's actually a form of betrayal that we call conditional commitment, right? There's always a potential like this. There can be a plan B here. And I caution people before they walk down the aisle, if you haven't settled that issue in your heart, if you go through Natalie's steps right there, right? If they haven't settled that issue in their heart, don't walk down that aisle, right? Because that thing is going to be wobbly. Commitment is a vast thing. And as a species, we're terrible at it. We're terrible about committing to cut the grass, right? Or to work out each day, or to take the trash out, whatever. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for it. Our brains are designed to keep us safe. Has a spotlight effect, it amplifies risk. Not to mention, the organic brain is just kind of weak. We sort of do the same stuff every day. So one of the ways that we can actually strengthen our ability to live up to our commitments is to do brain exercise. You can go to Brain HQ. Dr. Merzenek, co-creator of cochlear implants, created it. Well, this is the idea. I look at commitment, if you think of John Gottman's work, right, he should just have the sound relationship house. And then he had to come back and add the walls, commitment, trust, because the house didn't matter if there wasn't commitment, trust, right? And they're kind of going hand in hand. If you think about Natalie's flow, right, it's not like I just meet you and I'm committed to you and I trust you, right? These things are kind of, growing. You have to show me that I can trust you, that I can rely upon you, that you're going to be there for me. And as we're doing that, we can approach this idea of, I can be, fully committed in this relationship, right? This is my journey for life, come what may, but we still have to be building that basis of trust on a day by day basis. And I'm going to do that by just turning towards you in the small things of life, right? If you speak to me, I'm actually going to speak back to you, right? If you send me a text, I'm actually going to text back. I'm not going to wait 10 hours or ignore you. If you call me, I'm going to pick up the phone and say, hey, babe, how you doing? As opposed to hello, right? And in those small things, we're going to be building out that basis of trustworthiness. Sure. So I think of commitment in those terms. And I think without it, there's no relationship, right? Without it, there's no relationship. And you're living out a form of betrayal that we call conditional commitment.
I love the picture of the sound relationship house, because you've got the foundation and then you're building the walls. I mean, it's a structure. Yep. And you're working at it. And I think that's a great visual for our listeners. Our second,
I think that idea, Kim, you're right. As you're building that house, I mean, commitment and trust are continuing to grow.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Our second pillar is communication, which we believe is critical in every relationship. Chris, can you give us one example of a way that we can communicate in our relationship effectively?
Yeah, great question. I think kind of where I'm at this point on communication is if couples could shift the paradigm and understand that there are two subjective realities in play at all times and go for understanding of those, their communication would be much better. I think they might avoid the four horsemen. I think, they might not get hung up on their perpetual issues as much. So I think one quick step to help them get toward effective communication is just thinking, that why this is my reality happening, my partner has one as well. And let me go for an understanding of that thing and not dig in for my thing, right? Because I love you. And so I want to understand your world, right? Even if I don't agree with it. I need to understand it, and at least it gives me some insight into how you might be interacting with me in the moment. And then from there in my mind, I can start saying, oh, well, okay, well, I know where this attaches to back in their history. This might go to a trigger. This might be this, this might be that. And I can be more empathic toward it. But I think if we can shift that paradigm to thinking, look, you know, the universe is just not me. My partner has their own universe too. And let me dial into that. I think that's a great first step for effective communication.
How about you, Natalie? Would you have anything to add to that?
So I always challenge couples to operate out of the mindset of listening to hear before listening to share. So a lot of times couples are on their edge of their feet or on the edge of their seat, ready to like jump in and share their narrative or their experience. But, you know, being able to step back and say, okay, I'm going to actually listen to hear my partner's heart, to hear not just what's being said, but maybe the whys as to why it's being said. And I really encourage couples set aside time. We make time for what's important to us. If we think communication is naturally going to happen, it's not. We have to prioritize and set aside time using I statements, feeling words, because I feel because, and what I need, want, wish, and really just hearing the heart of your partner. I always encourage the speaker listener format where you're listening to the speaker. One person is the speaker. You're not jumping in and interrupting, and it can feel robotic at first, but over time it's natural, right? Because you're not interrupting each other. I don't interrupt my friends. I'm not interrupting you guys. Why would I jump in and interrupt my partner before he even finishes what he has to say? So I'm going to sit back. I'm going to listen to my husband, and then I'm going to parrot it back. So what I heard you say was, da, 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 da. Did I get that right? Is there anything I missed? What would you want me to take away from that? What do you hope I heard? And then you get a switch and you actually get to be the speaker too. So it's just a very smooth guide to encourage openness and healthy communication, to sit back to listen versus defend, you know, so.
Active listening is tough. It's not easy. And I feel like it's something we really have to learn how to do. It does not come naturally. So, Jeff, how about you? Do you have anything that you might want to tack on to what we've been discussing?
I think Natalie and Chris nailed it. I mean, that's one of the most important things I see with couples, is just that need to actively listen, to reflect back what you've heard before talking. You know, most couples are just missing what the other person is actually saying because of that subjective reality, because it's being interpreted through their own lens, right? And you really have to slow down the communication a lot of times with couples for them to actually hear one another, and not just hear the words, but what the meaning is, what the intent is underneath the words. That's one of the things I really focus on in my work with couples, is what's the intent of the message? Because a lot of times it's the intent of the message is completely lost on the other person.
Right. That's a good place to start.
One thing that I just want to point this out real quick, but Natalie, when we interviewed you and Eric, one of the things that you shared with me that really has stuck with me is that you, when you're talking, and maybe Eric's, you know, sharing a story with you, and he's sharing the same story that he shared with you probably 10 times over the term of your relationship, and every time you just sit and listen and you take it in, because you learn something new each time.
You stay curious.
Yes, you stay curious.
Stay curious.
That has really resonated with me. And I think if more people could do that in their relationship, they would glean so much more out of their partner.
When it comes to creating a kick-ass marriage, do you ever wonder what you could be doing better? Have you ever thought how helpful it would be to be a part of a like-minded community of other imperfect couples who want to level up in their number one relationship? Come visit Kick-Ass Couples Nation, where you can talk with people just like you who are looking for ways to invest in and increase their joy, commitment, and fulfillment in their most important human relationship. You'll have access to a team of licensed marriage therapists, coaches, articles, podcasts, live webinars, and more. Just visit MatthewPHoffman.com so you can learn more about a community that's ready to help you level up. That's MatthewPHoffman.com so you can become of the growing Kick-Ass Couples Nation right now. Yeah. And so conflict resolution is our third thing. And, you know, there's a statistic that you all know, is that 2/3 of conflicts, right, they're perpetual. You're not going to take care of them. So, Natalie, I guess I'd like to start with you, and then Chris will ask you to follow up. what do we do with the, if we can only solve one third, what do we do with the other two thirds of the things that keep causing us to butt heads and come with each other?
So rather than resolve the unresolvable, because you're literally going to be running into a brick wall, the goal is to establish a healthy dialogue about the perpetual issue, right? So trying to understand the need, the deeper meaning, right? And then learning to operate out of mutual love and respect for one another, because I'm not going to change my husband's personality. He's not going to change my personality and the way that we do things and operate. And so, which can lead to perpetual issues, right? And so it's being able to develop a healthy dialogue of communication, to develop understanding, which then softens the other partner, the opposing partner's reaction versus reacting. You want to respond to it, right? So it helps you learn and be curious about their needs as well. Like, what is their need in this? What is their struggle through this? Can I be a helpmate? Can I be an aid in this? So really just being able to get to a healthier dialogue about the perpetual issue versus we have got to resolve it. Well, newsflash, the keyword is it's unresolvable. And so helping navigate, you know, it helps navigate in a smoother way, I would say. What about you, Chris? What would you say? How would you add? I know you were next, so.
Yeah, so all of that is true. We're not going to solve them. I always like to give an example, and this will amplify, bring to life what Natalie was just saying. I saw an elderly couple on and off for a while. They were in their mid-80s and had been married 45 years, right? I think I've told you guys this story before. And they came in one day and they were arguing about a window they were putting in the house. Mm-hmm. And I cut them off because they started getting into criticism. I said, it's not about the window. And the guy says, you're damn right. It's not about the window. This woman's been trying to control me for 45 years, right? Perpetual issue number one. And she said, I've just wanted an opinion for 45 years. Perpetual issue number two. So we got after the dream, right? Like that's a fancy way of saying, what do you want in this thing, right? What do you need? And he said, I don't want to be taken advantage of. And she said, I need a voice. Right now, keep in mind, they're 45 years deep into the marriage and they're in their mid 80s, right? Mm-hmm. You would think, right? So anyway, we could go into the intervention. He had grown up in a very old school home, was taught never give a woman an inch, she'll take a mile, was married as a younger man, and got divorced, felt he got taken advantage of in divorce court. So his willingness or maybe in his capacity to accept influence from a woman just wasn't there. She had come out of a very physically and sexually abusive home and then got married to him. She never had a voice, right? In 45 years, they were doing this, right? Just gridlocking. About 3 hours later that day, they looked at each other and said, I never knew. They kind of, you know, they knew the stories. They never understood the impact. Right. That interpersonal impact, the impact on the relationship. And they'll revert back to that conversation for the rest of their life because they're going to bump into it again when they're saying, where do we want to go on vacation or what car do we want to buy or whatever. They're going to do this thing again. But now they know why. Right. And they can revert back to a conversation they started that day that contains more empathy now. Like, I get it. I understand what's happening here. Sure. Right. And so I can begin to as Natalie was talking about, dialogue around this, right? As opposed to arguing about, are we going to buy a Camry or a Lexus?
Great. Jeff, do you have anything to add to that? I know that there's been a lot of stuff thrown out, but what would you share about conflict resolution?
That was great stuff from Natalie and Chris. And I love the example Chris gave because it kind of brings in that aspect of family of origin stuff too, right? But I think, you know, one of the biggest things with gridlock, you know, couples, it's really important for them to understand and also just respect one another's differences, right? You know, we don't want to marry someone just like us. You know, there's that old Seinfeld episode where Jerry's dating someone just like himself and he finally realizes she's exactly like him. And he's like, I don't want to be with her. She's just like me. I hate myself, right? So, you know, there's value in differences and it's important to value the differences of your partner and actually start to see those differences as strengths, because when you're each bringing your unique strengths and your unique differences to the table, and you're looking at how they can go together to create something even more powerful and better than what you can do on your own, then you got something special there.
Sure.
Well, we talked a lot about traits and characteristics of a relationship, but I want to switch to the process of things. What are some key activities, things that we can do, things that we can establish in our relationship in order to achieve relationship nirvana? How about Jeff? Maybe you could start.
Can you repeat that one time? I didn't quite catch it.
So there are things that we can do, key activities that we can establish within our relationship to achieve relationship nirvana. What are some examples of things that we can do on a regular basis to help get to that place of nirvana?
Right. That's a great question. I think one of the most important things that couples can do, and that is often lacking because we overschedule, right? We take on too much. We have kids and we're running them around to soccer practices and we have careers. Couples just stop making intentional time to be together and to talk. Right. So I think one of the most important things a couple can do is really carve out time and guard that time for them to come together and really connect with one another, actually talk with one another, not about like schedules and to-dos and, you know, house projects and stuff like that, but really just check in with one another. How are you doing? You know, how are we doing, you know, and making time to have that conversation on a regular basis and being really intentional about it and really guarding it.
Yeah, protecting our time together is so important, and making space for that time, creating space for that time. Chris, what would you add to that?
Yeah, so for sure, space. You know, we talk about we get married, we're having kids, and we're just being consumed by life. Time is essential. I like to challenge couples to do things. So I'll say, look, just write down, you know, 20, 25 questions frequently, right? And just sit down and ask your partner those questions, just stuff you want to know about them. And then I want you to keep a 90-day journal where every day you have to find 2 to 3 good things about your partner and your relationship, and then speak them. And there can it can never be duplicate content. So whatever you find on day one, that content can never be used again days 2 through 90. I want to try to change their brains. So we're getting to know them. We're looking for the good now and speaking it. And then the third thing is I just challenge them to turn toward in the small things. If your partner texts you, immediately respond. If they call you, pick it up with a smile and a sweet tone. If you're texting and they speak to you, stop immediately and, you know, speak to them. So we're spending time getting to know our partner, right? We're looking for the good in them and our relationship, and then we speak it. And we're turning towards them in the small thing, which is how we build trustworthiness. That's our friendship, right? And friendship by far is the most important thing, to relationships, a good, strong, healthy friendship. So, those are very practical things that couples can do. They're very easy. They're very, very simple. And if I love you and I want to have a good relationship with you, this shouldn't be a problem for me. Right. I should be able to pull that off with relative ease.
Natalie, I'm going to ask you if you have any pearls that you would like to add on to Chris.
I would say play together, create play. It's one of the greatest forms of connection for me and my husband. We just play. We have so much in common. And if we didn't, right, like I have some couples that are extremely opposite of one another. They don't like the same things. It's being able to partner with and learn how to like that. You know, I have a friend that just recently got engaged, and her fiance is into wrestling, loves it. She's never watched it a day in her life. Well, guess what? She started watching it with him. Like, once a week, watching it, went to a wrestling event, had a big blow up face of him, like on a stick, like she just went all excited. She went all in. And now it's their thing, right? Because you want to play, you want to partner together. And then another one that I just encourage couples to do is dream together. dream big, have fun, encourage, you know, create. Don't put a limit to it. Like, oh, that's not realistic, baby. Or, you know, our finances aren't there yet. Or, you know, the kids. No, just dream. Dream together, play together. And then individually, I challenge couples, scan your environment with a positive perspective. Right? So you can have dishes in the sink, the house can be a mess. You walk in the house, scan like a radar, do, 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 do. And you're like, the kids are laughing. My spouse is on the floor playing with them and they're playing Uno. And it's like, oh, I'm going to go join them. Right? So scan with a positive perspective versus a negative perspective. So those are three main takeaways I would love for the listeners to implement in their relationships.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, our tendency, especially maybe as a woman, is to walk into the house and see the negative immediately, mm-hmm. Rather than look over and just see this beautiful family unit having a great time together. So that's great advice.
You guys,
us guys do it too.
Not yeah, just a few. Yeah. Thank you, Jeff.
You guys have given us a great list. I mean, we've got intentional time. We've got questions to ask, 90-day journal. We've got turning towards, dreaming, scanning for the positive. So kind of the next thing, guys, we've got a great list of things. And then I want to ask you all, looking at what you've shared with us today, you know, we get coaches for our kids, trainers for our kids to get better in sports. We get trainers to get in better shape. We get business coaches to help us do our business better. Why are people so reticent and lacking in building the team for their relationship? Because, man, I know that Kim and I don't have enough between the two of us to get our relationship where it needs to be. We have a team. We have counselors. We have trainers. We have coaches. We watch books. So what else? I'd love to hear you all weigh in a little bit. How do we build that team out? And what should that team consist of so that we can reach that relationship that we're all desirous of having? And Chris, I'd love you to start. You know, what are some of the things that we need to put in the toolkit, so to speak, to help build and be able to execute on that list of things that you all just shared with us?
Yeah, you know, Matthew, I think the idea is, and you know, I'm a guy of faith. I think the idea is a simple one, and it's where your treasure is, there your heart is. Mm. Right. And so if you're my treasure, my heart's with you and I'm committed to you, and none of these things are impossible or difficult. Mm-hmm. You need me, I'll be there. You want a better friendship, I'm there. You want to play, I'm there to play. You want to go to therapy, I'm there to go to therapy with you. But I think it's really summed up in that, where your treasure is, there your heart is. You know, I think it's that simple. And then, you know, people are always looking for motivation in this. And, you know, I'm with Mel Robbins on that. Motivation is garbage, right? It's never there when you need it. We have to be dedicated and we have to do things in life. We carry out our responsibilities whether we want to or not. My alarm goes off at 5 a.m. I spend 2 hours working out. Right. I know that I need, it's going to keep me healthy. I don't look forward to it every morning, but I get up and I do it every morning. And so if I walk down an aisle with you, I sure hope that my thought was, you know, you're my treasure. And so anything that this relationship is going to need is going to be simple for me. And I think if we think about it in simplistic terms like that, we can get to the real heart of the matters inside of relationships very quickly. You know, where your treasure is, or, you know, where your heart is, there, you know, there's your treasure, and vice versa. I think it's that simple. I think if you're my treasure and you have my heart, doing this stuff is going to be, you know, easy for me. It's going to come natural. None of the stuff relative to building relationships is that difficult. Right. It just requires a commitment to do it. Not that we're going to be perfect at it, because we're not going to be perfect at it, but it's a trend line.
Right.
We're just looking for a trend line over a vast period of time. So that's my thought. I just kind of think of it in simplistic terms like that.
Okay. Well, that's a big pearl, a great treasure. Jeff, what would you say? What do we need to add to the toolkit? What do we need to put in there so that we can execute, so that we can do? And if we're creating a system, what should that system have as part of it?
I definitely think the system should have good models right? You know, there's the saying, you know, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, right? I think the same is true in marriage, right? You know, you want to have good models in your life. You want to be around other couples, other people who have good relationships. You know, that like Chris was saying, you know, that doesn't mean that they're going to be perfect. You know, there are no perfect marriages, no perfect relationships out there. But you have people in your life that are committed to one another, that are committed to working on their issues, that are committed to bettering their relationship, you know, and they're not just, you know, ditching the relationship at the first sign of trouble, right? So having good models in your life, being with other people who have good relationships, or at least working to make their marriage good, to make it better. And having that piece, that accountability piece too, right? You know, being accountable to other people who can speak truth into your life, right? Who can say, when you're just kind of going off on your spouse, you know, or thinking about doing something stupid, you know, you have people in your life, you know, that can speak to that, you know, that can speak to you, and you accept influence from them and can hear from them.
Sure. I love that, Jeff. And Zig Ziglar has a great summation where he says, you got to get rid of that stinking thinking. And whether, so if there's people around you that are stinking up your life, you know, maybe you don't need to be around them, and surrounding yourself, actively deciding to, you know, the people that are struggling and angry and the guy's not treating the woman right, that's not a relationship you really want to foster. So I think that's dead on. And Natalie, what would you share about that system, or what should be in it or part of it to keep you on track?
I believe as therapists, and just, you know, what you guys are doing as well, with the podcast, is educating couples, right? And, you know, you guys are very vulnerable. You share your stories, you share your highs and lows, your strengths and weaknesses in your relationship. And it's inspiring to others. It's not just amping up the good. It's talking about the struggle and being more vulnerable, being vulnerable with one another. And Eric and I are where we are because we've done the work, and we continue to do the work, right? There's, we never get to the top of that mountain. It's a continuous, right? And so I have couples that I've seen literally 4 or 5 years continuously, because they're proactive, not every week, not every other week, maybe once a month, sometimes bi-monthly, but they're doing proactive work. They're addressing things along the way before crises arises, so that they have the tools to pull from when a crisis arises.
Sure.
And so that's my favorite type of couple to work with, that are hungry to have the tools. And I would say more couples are coming in open and desiring to do the work because they're tired of suffering, right? And so I always tell them, I'm only one form of support. You don't need me. You need community with a bunch of me's, right? So being able to have healthy people, healthy accountability, spiritual mentors, business coaches, accountability partners, you know, joining groups, joining, whether it's a Bible study, a Celebrate Recovery. I'm a part of a women's leadership group that meets. It's a 6-month program that meets once a month. I mean, I'm committed to continuing to grow. And so I just encourage my clients to do the same. Sure. And to build from there.
I love the proactive versus reactive, because so many of us wait and we're just react to what happens immediately. And it tends to be negative most of the time. So I appreciate you sharing that so much.
Yeah.
I just want to thank all of you for being with us today. It's been, out of respect for your time, we're just going to say thank you so much, and so grateful that you are willing to give us your expertise and share all your pearls of wisdom with us. Jeff, if our listeners wanted to reach you, how can they find you? Where can they reach you?
Sure. My wife and I both run an online coaching practice, working with couples. We have individual practice where we live, but we also do an online coaching practice where we can work with couples from anywhere. And it's www.greatestmarriageever.com.
Awesome. Natalie, how about you? Where can our listeners find you if they want to connect with you?
You can go to www.lifetransformationcounseling.com. Also on Instagram, Life Transformation Counseling.
Thank you. Chris, how about you?
I think the easiest place to find me nowadays is just couplestrong.com. It's consuming every ounce of my energy.
That's where you've been. I see the posts on Instagram. Man, you must not sleep, Chris.
All three. Go ahead.
Truth be told, I'm up till 2 and 3 in the morning every night right now.
Wow. You're dedicated.
I always say this, you know, these times in my life are these short periods of time, but I don't think they are. I don't think I'm ever going to sleep.
Sleep's overrated. I'm a firm believer in that. Well, you know, guys, just to kind of wrap it all up and put a bow on it, relationship nirvana, you know, as I think I shared with you all, it's not a summit. We reach it. We go, hey, I'm here. I can hang out, you know, sit back in the chair with a drink and everything's great. You know, we're going to keep facing summits in our lives. We're going to keep facing challenges and we're going to fall down the mountain too, and maybe not stay where we are. But it's really about being proactive, getting up, staying committed to those things, answering that 5 a.m. alarm and working out and doing stuff because we know it's good for us. It's good for our relationship and it's the process and it's not perfect, but dedicating ourselves to the qualities, building the team and staying committed is where it's all about. And I think that you all have really helped us kind of reach and understand that relationship nirvana is a process. And it's ongoing and it's someplace that we always want to be, but man, you're not there for very long until you fall or you realize there's something you have to do. So thanks for having the discussion with us today. We love all the work that you're doing. We're glad we get to speak with you and we hope that you all help us remember that happily ever after does not just happen. It's on purpose.
100%.
So thanks for joining us today, guys. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's all we've got for this episode of the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. If you like the content of this show, you'll love Matthew's newly released book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. To receive a digital mini book of quotes and images from the book, all you have to do is rate this show and leave a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to listen. Then email us a screenshot of your review at podcast@kickasscouplespodcast.com and we'll get it over to you right away. Until next time, remember, happily ever after doesn't just happen, it's on purpose.